Welcome to Account-Based Marketing. This podcast is designed as a collection of conversations with sales and marketing leaders, sharing thoughts and practical tips for becoming more customer-centric and accelerating revenue growth. Hosted by me, Alicia Linden, CEO at Momentum ITSMA, a global B2B growth consultancy and advisory firm.
Welcome to this episode on Account-Based Marketing. We're incredibly fortunate to have great access to ABX and CBX, where we see both sides of the coin. We're going to dig in this episode into how buying is changing and what marketing leads are doing with their account-based marketing programs. Today, I'm joined by Robert Hollier, partner at Momentum ITSMA, and Adam Bennington, head of consulting here. Great to have you both with us. Let's kick off with, here we are 20 plus years in to account-based marketing, a real watershed moment, it feels like, in marketing, and lots of evolution that we've seen over the past two decades. ABM has been given so many different names. Robert, why have we stuck to our guns? Why does account-based marketing still resonate with you?
I think ABM still makes sense. It still talks to me, I think, to a lot of other people as well. I spent most of my career in B2B strategy, and you spend a lot of time talking about questions like what and how and when and where, and you get quickly sucked into what I can think of as being the mechanics of creativity. But I think ABM puts why and who, those two big questions, at the forefront of the conversation. Those, to me, are the really big questions. So, why are we targeting this client? Why might they engage with us? Why might they buy from us? And who are we targeting? Who are we trying to engage with? And so on. So I think ABM, for me, is still very powerful because it puts that kind of why and who questions really at the kind of front of the debate.
Adam, same question to you. We've heard ABX, ABE, account-based strategy. Where do you stand on, sticking to this kind of account-based marketing ABM naming for this strategy?
Yeah, there's a lot in a single word and in a name. I think for me the importance of ABM is just this value. And thinking of ABM, I think, is this value that comes from focusing on and learning from your clients as part of this sort of ongoing engagement. That's so much more valuable, I think, to the enterprise than just being able to execute marketing more effectively into strategic accounts. It's much more now, I think, about the sort of wider experience of what it means to be a client and to be a partner alongside, a vendor. This is about two organizations, I think, that are connected and interlocked and working for each other. And it's all about how they behave, how they empower each other and inspire and liberate each other to grow. I think that's the aspect of ABM that for me is sort of really resonating as it evolves into it continues to evolve into the strategy that it is today.
Fantastic. So we're sticking to our goals, account-based marketing. Really keen to unpack what account-based marketing looks like today. And we're certainly event next week in London with Rethink. We're positioning very much that account-based marketing needs a continuous rethink. And we've tracked the Global 2000 for a long time now, how they're buying continues to evolve, and this need to be restless with any kind of account-based strategy is really coming through. Keen just to unpack what some of this means. Robert, you're leading our CBX study. It's increasingly harder to buy. What are some of the trends that you're seeing from across the data as it relates to shaping ABM and rethinking account-based marketing?
I think there's a couple of big trends that I would pick out. You mentioned that ABM began 20 years ago or thereabouts. I went back and looked at the Fortune 500 in the year 2000 compared to the Fortune 500 today. And actually, only 48% of companies have survived that kind of time lapse. So that's an incredible attrition rate. And we often talk about strategic buying decisions, but we should be talking about strategic existential buying decisions. These are really big decisions, and the companies that fall away, they fail to adapt, they make bad choices, they can't respond to disruption and so on. So I think in that kind of context of massive volatility in the kind of enterprise world, if you're still thinking of ABM as a marketing tactic, as a nice brochure with your logo on and the client's logo on, that's just not going to cut it in today's world. I think Adam touched upon some of the emerging themes around, I think what enterprises want is partnership, collaboration. They want that kind of value exchange. And that's not just a kind of marketing motion. That's a kind of full company engagement piece. I think that's where ABM is evolving. It's away from being a marketing tactic into a much more thoroughgoing, comprehensive strategy for how your organization is going to interact with its key clients.
Yeah, so incredible data point there, Robert, of 48% of the Fortune 500 are still here today. It's a remarkable pace of change and how organizations are evolving and shifting. And Adam, I'd love to get your take. You referenced clients a couple of times, and a big part of our focus has been shifting from accounts to clients. Why is it so critical that organizations look at treating their organizations as clients rather than accounts?
If you sort of lapse into referring to them as accounts, and they're a line item on the sheet, they're it's not necessarily indicative of the relationship that exists and that sort of fabric and currency that's being built up as part of this partnership that every program is striving to embed and develop. So this is about connectivity. This is about marketing being aligned and plumbed into the entire journey that an organization is going through. And Robert talks about this sort of extreme volatility. That's absolutely right. We're living downstream of a world where trust is in short supply, where organizations are increasingly risk averse, they're increasingly conservative. And those are reasons to justify a big change, moving from an incumbent that they might be embedded with for years into a new space with a new partner is risky. And these are enormous decisions that need to be made with really significant ramifications. So I think, again, I said this at the top of the call, there's so much meaning in just one word. If we talk about this as client marketing and really reinforce this relationship currency within that trusted partnership, that's something that I think is even more critical than it's ever been.
So growing expectations, fewer trusted providers, to really win in this world, treating clients not just as transactions, not as accounts and customers, but these valued partnerships that you've touched on. Fantastic. Let's shift gears and kind of look at where are we with account-based marketing today. We run a global benchmarking study of 300 plus organizations and have been tracking now for 7 years. The progress across many, many different types of and flavors of account-based marketing. Love to just talk a little bit about the role account-based marketing is playing in overall marketing strategy. I mean, it's gone, I think it's fair to say, from a glint in somebody's eye or an initiative that lives on an island to having huge impact for many organizations. Robert, what have you seen over the years from the work we do and also the global benchmarking study?
I think what we have seen very, very clearly through the last 6-7 years is the kind of growing prominence of account-based marketing. It is now a kind of de facto go-to strategy for, I think, almost all significant providers. ABM consumes an ever-increasing share of the overall marketing budget. I mean, I think we're talking relatively around, in the kind of 20-30% of the marketing budget, that kind of range. People report to us that ABM still remains, I guess, two things here. It still remains the most successful marketing program they have in terms of the ROI that they are seeing and reporting. And it is still their number one priority going into next year. So ABM is still very prominent, but, and I think this is quite a big but, it's clear that not all programs are equally effective. There's some big disparities between the best programs and the kind of the average programs, which is, I think, is quite challenging for lots of companies. And the second thing is, we are now in a world where ABM is all pervasive. So I think ABM is seen as almost table stakes by many clients and prospects. And that, I think, means people have to kind of think about, how can we raise the bar in terms of, how we are thinking about shaping, configuring our ABM programs. And I think Adam touched upon some really big points here around trust. For example, that seems to be in short supply. Alicia, you have this great quote about you gain trust in droplets, but lose it in buckets or something like that. And I think that's something that people have to kind of factor that insight into their ABM programs more than they perhaps are doing. And we know from, you said CBX is it's the reverse side of the ABX survey. And we know from CBX that buyers are finding harder and harder to make decisions. So, when you think about, how can ABM ease the buying process?
Yeah, and continuously, and in many ways, I think it's only going to get harder to buy. So how can marketing and sales teams best support their customers? Robert, you touched on a really good point there around, top performing initiative, it's driving significant ROI, it's seeing more investment levels. But then on the reverse of that, this idea of, many programs are delivering lift and engagement, but they're not materially moving the three R's, the relationship, reputation, and revenue metrics that we often look to. I know, Adam, you've done a lot of work around program strategy. And as you look at the maturity of marketing practices, you look at ABM adoption levels, what relationship does adoption and marketing maturity have to account-based marketing?
Well, you were just talking about how difficult it is for buyers to make decisions currently. I think it's pretty hard for CMOs to make decisions around their account-based activity and their account-based strategy. I mean, in terms of maturity and adoption, I mean, like Robert was saying, ABM is proliferated very broadly. The technical awareness and appreciation of what it can bring, it's great. Theoretically great. It all reads great on paper. It's true, there isn't necessarily, I don't think, a blueprint or a one-size-fits-all for making ABM work in one organization in the same way that it does for another. I think there's a recognition at the CMO, VP level, that making core changes to the way marketing has to operate for strategic clients, that is a program in its own right. And embedding change to create that much more effective operation requires a root and branch analysis to get to into the sort of minutiae of your marketing processes. So I think we can look very forensically at how we sort of discover what the right kind of strategy needs to be for ABM maturity and ABM adoption. But one thing I want to call out is that, again, it's a bit of a cliched statement, but that culture reads strategy for breakfast. It's definitely about cultures and behaviors. Is ABM an account-based practice something that is becoming a natural behavior, a natural way of thinking? Is it something that is being prioritized and protected? And I think my second sort of cliche of this response is we've all heard about people, process, and tech coming together harmoniously. That's never been more true and more important than it is today for embedding account-based marketing. But I think, obviously, alignment is critical and maintaining alignment top-down and bottom-up. But upstream of all of that, it's culture, it's capability, and it's consistency.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Whilst listening, please hit follow or subscribe on your podcast platform to get access to our full library of recordings and alerts of all new episodes.
Where do you see sort of the brightest sparks of innovation? Where is the kind of strongest impact that you're seeing organizations that have taken ABM as a tactic to really embedding it in the way that they're going to market?
Obviously, you can sort of distill ABM down to its seven steps. We've got our seven-step framework. Everyone's familiar with that. I think it's organizations that are sort of evolving those seven steps functionally into sets of services that they can deploy into the field and can sort of flow into their marketing ecosystem. The innovation off the back of that, I think, is around using those services to almost create a kind of a central nervous system for your account-based marketing, something that runs end-to-end, that isn't just about saying, we understand the drivers that we need to connect into. We can align the value of our offering into those drivers. We can create a value proposition. all of the messaging that we need in a personalized way. It's being able to keep that always on and alive as a service that is deployable, that's present, that's reactive. And but going back to my earlier point, I think it's about having the processes in place to allow you to take advantage of the tech enablement that Gen AI in particular brings to creating this sort of always on account based operating model. That's where I'm seeing the sort of the sweet spot for programmers today.
Fascinating. And I guess generative AI makes that nervous system or the ability to learn, iterate from these repeatable plays that you're deploying with message consistency, channel consistency, and that real integration that much easier or more straightforward. How are you seeing it?
I think it's something that you sort of build up to incrementally, right? It's like any sort of value chain. You're looking at where there are sort of steps or links in this process that where there's a bit of friction or where there might be a particular delay. I think speed and agility is something that successful programs are addressing. I don't really think it's sort of acceptable now with the tech enablement that we've got at our disposal and the degree to which this practice has proliferated for it to take weeks or in some cases even months to get things out into market. So I think there's some, you know, being able to apply these sort of very focused injections of process and tech grease into your ABM value chain is the order of today, and perhaps very much the order of tomorrow as well.
Great. So really make the most of generative AI and the tech that's coming. Robert, just turning to the CVX data and what you've been tracking from across the global 2000, generative AI is also playing a bigger role across buyers.
Generative AI is becoming a significant force in the kind of buying process. I think what's striking also is that it's becoming more powerful at the very largest companies. So they are kind of going all in on Gen AI and using that to kind of sift potential providers to help guide them towards good decisions. I think in part, this is a kind of somewhat negative response to kind of challenges that we talked about before of people finding decisions harder to take. So, using Gen AI to help kind of clarify that. As I mentioned before, I think clients are using Gen AI typically in the first phases of the buying process to kind of research the market, understand what's on offer, shortlist suppliers. I think they are also using it, and this is an area we're going to be exploring this year, they're also using it to help them drive that internal consensus around a decision, which we know is often a hard process to kind of force and finalize for enterprises because you've got to involve people from different parts of the company, different geographies. So Gen AI is becoming also like a kind of cohering tool that allows the company to kind of say, this is why we came to this decision. Here's the kind of logic behind it. So I think it's one of my concerns is that actually buyers are more advanced in their use of Gen AI than are many providers. There seems to be a bit of a kind of disparity there if we compare CBX data on buyers with ABX data on providers. There's a bit of a disparity there, which I think should give us all pause for thought. And some of the things Adam is talking about are fantastic, but I don't think yet those are mainstream practices. And that is maybe the challenge for 24, 25. Don't we agree with that, Adam, on that point around?
I do. I think the ball is very much, or the sort of the advantage ball is very much in the court of the buyer and the decision maker. They can use Gen AI. I hope Gen AI to sift and synthesize through the smorgasbord of very focused account-based marketing that they'll be receiving as that becomes more and more prevalent. It does sort of beg the question that are we headed down a path where we've got machines helping to produce very focused, personalized account-based content, and then the very same machines being used to breed and synthesize that content to speed up the whole process. So perhaps we'll see this sort of evolve full circle into just very, very clear, very, very explicit and very relevant and timely expressions of the value that that a vendor could bring to its client. But I did want to just take a moment to call out one stat from CBX that really resonated for me. And when we started this whole process back in 2019, which feels like an eon ago, this whole sort of trust currency thing, trust was built, fortified most effectively by vendors when they were meeting with their clients regularly, but without giving them a sales pitch. That was the number one sort of vehicle or means to be able to build trust. That's now dropped to 8th in that league table. Yeah. So that, I think there is a clear demand, and we talk about Gen AI a lot. This has to be a solution that is to a clear sort of business and sort of marketing problem. And I think that problem is pretty clear with that shift. There is a desire now to be, for vendors to sort of be a little bit more assertive in terms of putting forward a new point of view, a clear articulation on a different alternative that a client or a prospect can take, and the business case and the roadmap that comes with that. There's obviously a demand to be sold to, but to be sold to consultatively and to be sold to and engaged with on the client's terms. And I think that puts massive pressure on vendors and their marketing teams to be able to engage in that sort of mode and with that sort of fluidity. You're going to need to be plumbed into that ebb and flow of consultative selling demand from clients. And I think we mentioned that stat at the top of the call, that decisions are made much earlier in this buying cycle. So being really sensitive to jumping on those opportunities is absolutely critical. But we've got to caveat that against another killer CBX stat. And I remember this from our last year's ABM forum, because I presented this to the room. This extraordinary figure, which for me, I think, sort of stands out as one of the CBX data points of all time, that a third of buying cycles lead to nowhere or are put on hold. So that waste of resource, or that risk of waste of resource, both on the client side and the vendor side, that just isn't sustainable, right? And so there's an urgency to be there in front of the client earlier. There's a need to be plumbed into the way the client wants to receive information, and the client wants to be challenged, and the client is expecting to see new alternatives and new paths. But there is always the risk that if you get that wrong, or you don't pick the right opportunity at the right time, you're going to hemorrhage a third of your time and resource. And that is the dilemma that I think today's ABM leaders have got to double down on.
How to rethink ABM. And as I'm just listening, it sounds like on the buying team, generative AI is another member on the buying team. Marketing teams, account-based marketing teams need to tap into more of that generative AI capability to extend their team. But this idea of using this as a moment in time to really think about different modes of collaborating with your customers, really changing where you're putting effort now that you've got this extended team and firepower. Really, I mean, fantastic data points there, Adam, on the buying journey and the road to nowhere and how much resource goes into these buying processes. Robert, any other kind of standout points from you? I mean, there's definitely a piece around team selling and how that's evolving. It'd be great to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, I was just going to add in a point which kind of, I think, builds on what Adam was saying, that if we zero in on those buyers who are making the greatest use of AI, you might think that those buyers would have less demand, less requirement for human interactions. But actually, those heavy advanced AI users are also putting greater weight on human interactions, which sounds paradoxical, but actually you can see they're not looking to replace humans with AI. They're complementing each other. So I think some of the things that Adam was talking about, beginning to kind of talk about, so how you make your SMEs, your subject matter experts, available to the client, how you make your senior exec team available, how efficient your kind of sales manager or account executive, whatever you call them, is, how those kind of work together. Those are critical factors in terms of success, because those all actually build up that kind of trust theme that we've been talking about on the call already. But I think one of the big highlights of the very latest CBX research is this continuing preference to actually stick with an existing provider if you can. So the odds are heavily weighted in favor of an existing provider. And if you are the existing provider, or if you are a potentially new provider, you need to actually engage with quite different strategies with a client to kind of win their hearts and minds. I think that comes out very strongly in the very very latest, not yet released CBX data. So we're seeing some, if you like, kind of bifurcations in terms of how providers need to actually engage with their clients or with their prospects. And I'll give you one example. For example, if you are a new provider, your number one winning factor by a long, long, long way is going to be innovation and your ability to kind of prove you can leverage innovation to actually help the client, address their business issues. So you've actually got to be quite nuanced in the way you message your clients or your prospects, and you actually got to think about telling different narratives to actually engage those people, because they're looking for different motivations. They're quite different in terms of the way they behave, the way they access information. So again, an example here is that if you look at third-party sources versus provider-sourced information, an existing client will always rate provider information higher than third-party information. But if you're a non-client, a prospect, that flips on its head. So you will actually weight third-party information more highly than provider information. You've got to think about everything you do in terms of how you engage, what information you surface, who you kind of bring to the table on your side, what your kind of core narrative is, and so on. I think CBX gives a lot of insights into how you can actually build a kind of winning strategy around those kind of foundations.
Fascinating. We're looking forward to the release of full CBX. So we're going to share where you can find it shortly. Our business is clearly here to help organizations connect with clients on a whole new level. And we've been really busy over the past few years listening to our clients and evolving our own offering. And we've just wrapped our fiscal year and have seen really strong performance in deepening our relationships across key accounts, enhancing our own reputation with multi-year transformational engagements with our clients. And critically, we've seen 19% year-on-year revenue growth from our key clients. It's hard to do, but Adam, I'd love to know, how your teams have thought about integrated account development and have helped really shape our own case study, if you will, in account-based marketing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a case of us sort of drinking a bit of our own Kool-Aid there. We think sort of obsessively and pragmatically about our clients' problems, right? It's I think when you're sort of committed to focusing in that way around sort of business and marketing challenges that are inherently complex, right? We're going to go deep. We're going to go forensic on what sort of levers we can pull that are going to drive the outcomes that our clients need. And I think thinking client-centrically about their challenges and being very persistent about finding the source of those issues and finding the things that we might need to pull or understand a little bit more for the solution to present itself is right at the heart. So this sort of balance between being obsessive about the approach but being pragmatic about the solution, and in particular the transformative nature of these solutions, we can write great strategy, we can rationalize that strategy through very detailed discovery. Where I think it's certainly our focus as a consulting group moving forward is that tipping point, right? Being able to present these options for change and being able to guide our clients through the pragmatic path to that exceptional outcome that comes from the obsessive approach to unpacking the challenge. And I think if there's one thing that we've done going into this year as a group that brings that sort of integration together, that sort of integrating kind of glue, is just having a consistent way of developing our own solutions that deliver those change outcomes. And we've got a five-step blueprint that we're applying to every solution that we put forward, whether it's building a client-centric go-to-market from scratch or trying to strengthen reputation and trust through thought leadership. It all comes down to focusing on that discovery, being able to diagnose the issue, get to the root causes of those issues, and it's almost always a combination of different factors, again, people, process, and technology. But be able to present a reason to change, a roadmap for change, and being able to surround that whole change motion with the enablement that the organization needs to embed it. And that's a whole lot more than just training, learning and development around the technical aspects and disciplines of account-based strategies. It's about, you know, really being plugged into the organization's ecosystem and being able to enable change using that environment in a way where much more longer-term strategic value is brought to bear. I mentioned that the sort of midway through the call that it's a hard time at the moment for CMOs, and you know we're all going, you know, we're all sort of living in a world at the moment where we've got politics in front of us, right? We've got elections in the UK coming up in the next few weeks. We've got elections in the US later this year. It feels like we're always working to a sort of a, you know, 4 or 5 year sort of change cycle at best. And I think, you know, having a strategic approach to just diagnosing program issues and committing change needs to think that needs to be organized in a way that it's long-termist in its approach. And I think, you know, the CMOs will value that given the volatility that exists within their role and the pressures that they're under.
Fantastic. So it's not just a personalized campaign then, Robert, from a marketing perspective. What role has our own marketing taken in this?
I'm going to share with you a new personal slogan that I devised, which kind of tries to capture this, which is about, you know, stop thinking like a marketeer and start thinking. So I think so much of marketing is very kind of inward focused. It's not kind of outward focused. I think that's one thing that we as a consultancy are very good at, is having that kind of outside in perspective and really kind of sharing that. And as Adam said, really kind of proposing ideas that kind of map to where the client is, where the client wants to get to. So I think that's a kind of theme that ABM needs to kind of become this kind of organizationally wide change initiative. And those are big words and easy words to kind of spit out. And there's a lot of detail, a lot of mess probably involved in that. But we definitely need to kind of get away from this kind of ABM equals marketing tactic mindset into ABM is something bigger, deeper, richer, more profound, and actually more influential, more impact.
I think CMOs and marketing leaders can be confident, right? They can be bullish that ABM can be that vehicle that can drive that change for them, that can make marketing far more sort of demonstrable in terms of being able to showcase real ROI and being able to bring together all of these investments that CMOs are making into tech, into brand, into new thought leadership strategies, things that are extensive, that are important. The thing that I love about account-based marketing and account-based discipline is that we're creating this sort of prism, this lens, that every beam of marketing investment and marketing capability, if it can be organized to be sort of focused into that ABM prism, it's reflected and refracted into the client as this sort of force multiplier. It's greater than the sum of all of its parts. And I think as long as we stay honest to that and continually show that this is a mechanism that allows you to literally sort of turbocharge or supercharge all of those other investments that you make right into the client's world. Just keep doing more of that. It's proven itself, and with I know we talk about Gen AI a lot, but with the means that gives to be able to create a completely new inflection of, you know, you have a thought leadership report that takes you weeks or months to develop, you know, you could take a cut of that, you can adapt that for an individual account or an individual persona, and these are new means to be able to get ever more value out of your investment that we've never had before. And I think it's risky not to take a risk on this sort of opportunity. And I think that paints a very sort of exciting and optimistic picture for the coming cycle.
Fantastic. Well, this time last year when we met, we were very much championing this idea of ABM not being a one-size-fits-all, and that's really come into play over the last 12 months. And it sounds like the coming 12 months are really about marketing capability, not in service of the business, but in service of clients. You've certainly given me a lot to think about and lots to rethink as we're shaping account-based marketing strategies. Robert, Adam, thanks so much for joining the conversation. I've loved it. We could stay on, I know, for at least another hour, but it's been a great dialogue. For our European-based listeners, you still have time to reserve your space at Rethink Account-Based Marketing, taking place on June 25th in London. Visit MomentumITSMA.com to find out more details, and we look forward to see you soon.
This podcast is brought to you by Momentum ITSMA, a leading B2B growth consultancy and pioneers of account-based marketing. Learn more at MomentumITSMA.com.